Futures trading is not suitable for all investors. Past performance is not necessarily indicative of future results. The opinions shared on this podcast should not be construed as trading recommendations and do not necessarily represent the opinions of EdgeClear, the hosts, officers, and affiliates of the podcast. All right, it is an absolute pleasure to welcome on for their first appearance on Behind the Screens, Jas and John Kirby. Gexpot is probably, if you're listening and know what that is, that's where you know them from. If you don't know what that is, we're definitely going to get into it. Thank you for joining me, guys.
Hey, thanks, Ian. So I'm Jas, creator of Gexpot, and this is John Kirby, consultant.
Yeah, thank you so much for having us on.
Of course. So just really quick, and you guys have a great presentation on here, and it's going to be super informative. Just talk to me a little bit about kind of your individual backgrounds and anything people want to know about you or how you got into markets and developing this tool.
Yeah, so for the longest time, I was really like a fundamentals investor or swing trader. And then COVID happened. And I think I, like a lot of other people, got really interested into, well, options and day trading. And then I remember discovering an indicator called NOPE, created by Lilly. And it was an indicator that looked at net deltas on SPY options, specifically to look for reversions in price action. So that was kind of my first foray into like market microstructure. And then from there, I started learning about gamma, especially through squeeze metrics. And then for a bit, I was trading using spot gamma's levels, where they would put out levels pre-market, and then I would trade off those. And then for a time, I was wondering what an intraday GEX structure would look like. And so I created GEXpot. And then that's kind of morphed into this whole thing that I'm pretty surprised and excited to share with other people. But yeah, it's been quite a journey.
Yeah, and I mean, I came at GEX from a completely different angle because oddly enough, I first started trading kind of recently, like 4 or 5 years ago, but I started off directly with selling premium. And I came at it from more of like an academic side. And so I was super interested just in managing my Greeks, like managing an overall portfolio of selling premium. And that eventually started to morph into trying to look into where other people were positioned and what their exposure was, because I knew how I was modifying my own exposure. And then especially as EURDTE options started to get introduced and we start to see these effects, and we'll talk about this a little bit in the presentation, but the effects started to become more drastic, so to speak. I started to really dive in a little bit by means of the Bear Trap Discord, but then also squeeze metrics, also spot gamma, I mean, all the resources that are out there. And then eventually I sort of got to the point where I was like, well, you know what? I would rather do this my own way and plug and chug the numbers myself. I met Jas actually online through his server NFA. And we just started collaborating on all these sorts of different research projects. And to be honest, I think we do more research than trading now.
Isn't that funny how that goes? You start to get really into the thing that's going to help you with your trading, and then you end up doing more digging into the background of it than anything else.
Oh yeah, it's fun. I mean, the rabbit holes are endless, right? Like, you get to really dive deep into things. It's like a combination of both math, but then a lot of it is human psychology too that can get factored in, which is always really fun.
Yeah, and I think we complement each other really well, because Jasper has more of like a technical trading background. He understands, you know, volume profile or sort of the, I guess, market internals a little bit better. And I sort of have more of a background in option positioning and options pricing theory, that sort of stuff. So yeah, it works pretty well.
That's really cool. Now, as far as GEX goes, like, you know, I mentioned this to you guys already, but from my side, as far as day trading, working with a lot of intraday futures traders, I hear people mentioning GEX like once a day now. So for those like unfamiliar, can you just give like a brief, you know, overlook of the concept?
Yeah. This is a little bit, my camp. It, I think the easiest way to understand Gex, right, without getting into any of the math, is just that it is the easiest way to represent the tipping point at which an option seller will have to start to panic because their obligation has grown too large for them to handle. And that's because obviously like options unlike futures are instruments with convexity. If you are, as soon as you enter an obligation, you sell an option in particular, you can be exposed to a loss that is much more substantial than the initial premium that you collected. And so that allows us to see in advance a lot of the times inflection points in the market.
Yeah, I think from like a futures perspective, or at least an intraday perspective too, at least for me, GexBot has been about, I think this is a concept pretty familiar to order flow traders, but the idea of like trap traders, right? So people who are trapped in their positions and are forced to get out, you know, we can look at that in like the footprint or volume profile. And GexBot is just a way of looking at the options market side of that. So where are these pressure points at which people are really threatened to close their positions or press the other way? It offers these pivots where you can enter and keep tight risk if you're looking for reversions or breakouts.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest component for me. And what really clicked when, you know, I first talked to you guys was kind of the concept of trap traders, right? Mm-hmm. So, and that's always made sense to me because kind of like you, Jess, everything from my side previously is profiling and order flow analysis and stuff like that. And so, you know, this information started to make a lot more sense to me once I saw it, you know. But before I started talking to you guys, I had no idea. I just saw people tweeting about Gex, right? So,
I think it's been around for a while. I know that zero DTE has become like this huge thing lately, but I mean, you know, SpotGam is around since like 2018. Squeeze Metrics for I think around the same time, maybe longer. Mm-hmm. This phenomenon has definitely been pretty common. Although I think with like the bear market of 2022, the uncertainty, you know, markets become more technical and range bound as opposed to like, you know, if you're in a full send trend bull market, there's not really a point in trying to like scalp ranges. You just buy and hold and or swing positions instead of, you know, trying to scalp around small ranges.
Definitely. Well, cool. I was going to say, yeah, if you want to pop to,
John, if you want to get into this.
Yeah. The reason that we included these two slides at the beginning is just so that we can kind of all have an understanding of why this is so important. And this is just from Cboe, and it's just basically looking at stock, average daily option volume in indexes and ETFs and how it's grown so much over time. And the other thing to understand is that because an option, right, is a leveraged instrument, even a volume of options that's around, I'd say like 1/50th of overall volume of transacted shares is gonna get you a huge, huge effect in terms of those options having an effect on the underlying instrument. And that's what we've been seeing. And in particular would you go to the next slide too? With the growth of zero DTE options volume. So usually what happens, and kind of a lot of times the missing link, right, is that if you buy an option or you sell an option, you're not buying or selling it in a vacuum, right? There's somebody on the other side of that trade who's going to have to compensate for whatever it is that you did. A lot of times people refer to these entities as market makers. I think it doesn't necessarily matter. It's just a question of understanding what's going into and coming out of the market. So if you buy a call, you're expressing a bullish bias, you're getting long a certain amount of what we call like synthetic or imaginary shares, which we usually refer to as deltas. And then that, as with any order, or rather or an order for actual shares, is going to have an impact on the market. And so especially with zero DTE, because those options are such short duration, the effect of those deltas are being expressed sort of immediately, right? It's an immediate purchase of shares, so to speak, or selling of shares, depending on what happens. And so it has a tendency to really, really move the markets. And because of the leverage effect, because of the fact that a single option, which doesn't cost you a lot in premium terms, is an expression oftentimes of, on average, somewhere around, 20 to 50 to 100 shares at the top, it's actually, they can have a really, really outsized effect on the market. So that's just, we just wanted to get those two slides in so that people can understand why this is actually, or how the effect has been growing and why it's so important. And then you can kind of start to see it in real time by watching GexBot, which we're going to show later. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, I think with these, to note that with how short jaded these options are, a great deal of that reflexive effect on the underlying is through gamma. I mean, that's where most of it seems to be the best way of measuring that those reflexive effects.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. Go ahead, John. Sorry.
No. I just want to say that the reason for that is because gamma is expresses the rate of change of the delta with respect to underlying price. So what that means, like TLDR, is just whenever your option is at max gamma, that's typically when it's at the money. As it's getting into that point, that's when it expresses the most risk for whoever sold the option, for whoever's on the other side of that trade. Which is why weighting everything according to gamma gives you some very sort of useful nodes in the market, because you can tell where people are going to have to be panicking the most. Because it's essentially, right, if I sell you an option and it's a 30 delta, as price starts to move to the strike price at which I sold you the option, that option's going to move from a 30 delta to a 50 delta. But the ramp up from the 30 delta to the 50 delta is actually, that's the fastest part of the curve, so to speak. So it's the part of the convexity that is the most convex, in other words. And that's when people really get scared that are on the other side.
Yeah, and that's when you start to have to see people hedging and making moves to either cover that or get out or add more in some cases, I would imagine, right?
Yeah, a lot of times we've been seeing that lately. A lot of times they'll just double down, which is interesting to see. And then get run over.
Of course. So this is what we have up now. This is an overview. I'm familiar with it as well. And you've got it on the zero DTE part here. And this is SPX, right? So at the moment, that's what it's focused on.
Yeah, so this is SPX. Essentially, what we do is we get the gamma of each contract at each strike. This is zero DTE only. We're calculating the gamma exposure for each contract for both calls and puts, and then we're netting the difference out. So we're seeing that there's a greater amount of put gamma along this side and then greater amounts of call gamma above spot. one important thing, too, is that for GexBot, we are making the assumption of all puts being bought and all calls being sold, which leads to dealers being short puts, i.e. short gamma, and then on the other hand, they're long gamma for calls. And in this case, it's part of the assumption is the idea where SPX is primarily used for hedging by institutions. But I think in terms of thinking about it as a trader, it's more important to, it's really just about differentiating between put and call gamma. That's really the reason that we kind of have that opposite for display purposes, seeing these levels. But yeah, so the way this works is that we have the GEX for each strike. The pink bars is the GEX by volume, and then the red bars are GEX by open interest. And then what we're doing here too is we're sort of interpolating this curve. And then this is our major positive or major call gamma point. This is basically just the peak of this curve. And then our major put gamma is down here, which is the peak of this curve, which is the absolute minimum. And then in between, we have zero gamma, which is sort of a neutral point between these two levels. And because, so it's a price letter style, so there's no concept of time. And so we use dots essentially to inform prior states of GEX for each strike.
Got it. So as the market's moving towards, you can probably assume to see more GEX approaching and then away pulling off. Like, so the white line then is your current
spot
price, right?
Yeah. So this is the original form. Well, the original form is really our Twitter image outputs. And then it became this website. But I think it's actually most clear, ironically, really recently, was I able to plot this directly to a Sierra Charts chart book. And you know, even for me, this has been pretty new to be able to see this in real time, the way that that price will react to these levels. So here I kind of want to show an example of what a breakout trade might look like. I don't know how visible this is. If I go full screen, can you guys?
Yeah, if you go full screen, that's awesome. Perfect. Yeah.
Okay, so on the left here, we have it's a 5K tick chart, and then we have the GEX profile plotted to it. And then this is a volume profile. This is a 300, well, this is a yearly volume profile, essentially. And then on the right, we have a 5-minute footprint chart. And so when I'm looking at GEX, I'm never looking at it by itself. I'm always looking at it in the context of, you know, auction, how's the auction going? What is our volume profile look like? Then does the option market agree? Is this also a point where I should be paying attention? And then, you know, drilling further down, what does the footprint look like? What does the actual order flow look like on a micro level, right? And so here, just to set the stage, we've kind of come up into this high, we've sold off, we've bounced off this major put gamma level, and then now we're kind of compressing into this upper range. And so typically you have two choices here, right? So like when you're coming into the upper end of this distribution, you can either look to fade it, right? You're looking for a reversion or a rejection, or you can look for a breakout. Now, based off of how we've been moving, I would favor a breakout just because as we are compressing into this high volume node at 53, we're seeing continued two-way action on footprints. I know that this is a point at which anyone who's trying to short these calls is going to be most threatened.
Mm-hmm. So this is where they're starting to get squeezed, right? This is where the call sellers are starting to get squeezed and have to do something, right?
Yeah, exactly. And the fact that we can see like very like strong amounts of volume here shows that, you know, people are looking for pressing into these, into this position, and they're looking to break them essentially. You know, if you're looking for a rejection, you probably see like an instant failure or something. But we're doing this methodical pressing into this level. So for breakout traders, you know, typically it's like you look for the pop, maybe you look for a retest, and then you can keep your stop very tight. Or you can, you know, trade information for that, go in early. Depends on how you like to play it. But these are the moments where I'm usually looking for some sort of a break. But even then, you know, with this GEX profile, I'm always trying to confirm with volume too. You know, I'm looking for that thinness, that pop through, the swing, and then the confirmation.
Yeah. So it's all still like within the context, but it's obviously helping you visualize too that we are at this huge major positive as well.
Yeah. So, yeah. That there's confluence going on with this.
Yeah.
But yeah, this was the 17th, and then we ended up breaking away. A lot of it too is very much like, so like the GEX profile will look a certain way. But if there's not like the underlying volatility in the market to give you those opportunities, like it, you can't like force it, right?
Yeah.
Like it's very dependent on like still the underlying and the context of what's going on too.
I think another thing to add, Jasper, is that in this particular case, we could see that the bars on the upper two strikes are expanding, which means that it seems like people are actually adding calls above spot, which is what you want to see, right? And the same, it's people pressing for continuation, essentially.
Mm-hmm. Yes. It's very similar to volume profile, you know, except the difference is that, you know, the volume profile, we can only really see locally what's going on. And maybe you might be looking at like the limit order book, but those can always kind of be spoofed. But with Gex, it's, these are like real positions that people are opening with contracts.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's, you can't, like, that's hide that. That amount of context is, I think, extremely helpful in my opinion, because, you know, if for me as a trader, if I don't have that Gex overlay, like same thing, I might be looking for the breakout or a reversion, and maybe other context clues could help cue me into a breakout, but then having, you know, that added call exposure above, right.
Yeah, you know that people are putting their risk on there, as opposed to, I mean, I don't know. I still like looking at limit order books sometimes, but it's so hard to like really judge it, you know? Like sometimes you'll be like, okay, I see this order up there, but it's probably just a stink offer. Like, I don't really know if it's real or if he's just messing with us or.
If that's going to be pulled right as soon as the market gets within, you know, a point.
Right, they just rug pull you. But yeah, so this is the opposite, or this is a different kind of trade with Gex. Now, in this case, so there's also I'll talk about that in a second, but here we've like come into, you know, we've rejected off the overnight distribution. We're coming down. We're sort of bounding around zero gamma, and it looks like we're about to explore this lower distribution area. And so here, so there's kind of this initial, you know, major put gamma, this peak of convexity here. But like I said before, you know, I always want to look for that confluence. And in terms of the volume profile, I don't have a daily volume profile here, but I know that this is the middle of this distribution, right? This is not really where I kind of want to look for. If I was looking for a reversion, this is not really where I want to enter a position. You know, even for, you know, adding to a short for continuation, it's not really the most ideal place. On the other hand, so we're seeing like the Gex sort of reflexively adjust here, and it's kind of flashing around this area too, which is a bit more ideal if we're looking for some sort of reversal. But yeah,
that makes sense too, because you don't, you know, same thing with the context, like you don't, where there's the most volume is probably not your area where you're going to try to put on a trade anyway. But as you can start to see that build below, like as we're watching this, you know, you can see that build below and build below the major negative. Yeah,
it's sort of like, you know, like when you're targeting areas, if you're targeting like VPOX typically form good targets, but not necessarily entry points, because, you know, entry points, it's like your odds or your probabilities of whether that forms a bottom or a top is a little bit more balanced and not quite as skewed. Versus like a low volume area over here, maybe not quite an LVN, but you know, definitely a lot less quote unquote liquidity, right?
Yeah,
that's another thing to note, right? It's that a lot of times just having Gex spot up can give you a pretty decent idea of, you know, what is the market expecting in terms of the maximum move, right? Because if like major negative and major positive gamma are often those points where people are still willing to buy or transact those options. And then further out, they sort of start to die off a little bit. So it's like those guys are still worth transacting because there's still a chance that we get there. But far beyond that is not highly probable.
Yeah, and there's also another case here too. Like, you know, at first we're kind of like scraping down, and this is also a 5K tick chart. But as we're coming through here, price is dramatically speeding up. So there's like a reflexive nature of people adding to shorts or bids stepping out of the way. But you know, when you're looking for, if you're looking for reversals, right? Like, it's often the faster that price moves that the odds of reversal get higher. In the other case, when we were looking at that breakout, there was kind of time for price to sort of compress into that level. Whereas here, like, you know, say if you had shorted near the overnight high or like even around zero gamma or somewhere, the speed with which your position has gone green is literally compressing your brain. And so like your ability to make decisions has fallen off dramatically. And it's very easy to get scared out of your position due to the euphoria, right?
Yeah, it makes sense. And on the breakout side, you know, when you're you mentioned it, it kind of has a lot of time to coil. You know, it's like running a car up a hill is the common thing, right? Like sometimes the car's not going to make it up the hill the first go, but it's got to go back down a little bit and then wind up again and kind of break through. Whereas on this, like, you know, like you said,
yeah, this is, this
you
is
start like, to enter panic mode a little bit on a quick,
oh,
quick
yeah.
move.
Yeah, it's like real time. And it's like, you know, the second one, you see one person covering their short, it's like, okay, all right, I'm getting the hell out of Dodge too. And you get that, that cascade effect where just everyone, you know. And so we also hit like, you know, if you're in these puts, this is sort of the belly of the curve, like the peak of your convexity, right? Because you're so strapped for time with both zero TTEs, but in general with gamma, so that, you know, any point at which you've hit that peak is usually the ideal time to get the hell out of your
That's an awesome point, Jasmine, that like ties into what I said at first. Like in the same way as peak convexity is the highest risk for the option seller, it's also probably the time at which if you're an option buyer, you want to liquidate because you're not getting more convexity if you hold that option longer. So either if you want to stay in that position, maintain your directional bias, you should probably roll the option further along out on the chain to get that maximum bit of convexity. Or you should just liquidate and look for another trade, which is what drives a lot of this action.
Yeah, that's me, the one liquidating, looking for other trades.
Yeah. I mean, in this market, you know, it's like you take your points and you run. Like,
yep.
It gives you what you can, what you can take, and then just get the hell out because it's so uncertain for everyone.
Yeah, it's uncertain, and until pretty recently, it was pretty compressed too. So, you know, you got to grab what you could. Yeah.
I mean, we finally broke out to, what, over 4,200, but came back into the range, and it's just, you can feel, like, the frustration of everyone, like bulls and bears.
Yeah, you can feel the tension of it. While we're on this too, like, so obviously we watch the breakout and then a reversion right now when the market tends to be very flat. Obviously I'm assuming that it's sort of hovering around that zero gamma value. Is that for you guys an indication of like, hey, maybe today is just not a good trading day, or are you still looking for maybe reversions or some type of play out of that?
Yeah, it's so like, you know, those days where we're kind of just ranging around. So zero gamma will usually float around like the daily VPOC, and then there's like this, you know, defined line of sand above and below. I don't know. Personally, I'm a big fan of trend days. I know that they're not as common as range days, but I find that like reducing the number of trades, reducing the amount of risk that I'm putting in at a time is like better mentally. And the return
the same way. Yeah.
Is typically better. Yep. So I like it definitely, it still is good at navigating the structure and those kind of slow range days, but I personally am just not really a fan. Although I know that some people, you know, really like those ones better because you have your defined levels.
I was going to say I'm the odd one out here because I love this particular type of structure. Well, it's what's beautiful about it. Okay, just to play the other side is yes, your trading frequency is increasing, more commissions, all that stuff. But on the other hand, what's super cool from a gamma perspective is you have the calls decaying up top and you have the puts decaying underneath. And as we go into the end of the day, both of them will be kind of decaying equally. So as we get into one side, it's actually going to push us right back to the middle, and then we get to the other side, and it'll push us right back to the middle again. So you're kind of trading with like decay is on your side in this sense. And that has to do with like another aspect that we haven't really discussed yet, which is, or we've alluded to, but it's how, especially with these zero DTE options, the fact that they're expiring really governs how they behave. But yeah, basically if, you know, if they're out of the money, if they're decaying, then the obligation that they're creating for the option seller is also decaying. And insofar as it's decaying, that option seller can buy back some of their hedges. And insofar as they do that, it'll push the market right back to where it was, right back to the middle.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, in that context, like I just historically am very bad at trading range bound days. I'm okay at spotting, I'm pretty good at spotting the breakouts. And, you know, like Jas said, keeping that risk lower and riding that is much more my favorite way to trade than trying to trade the range. But like you said, John, it's like, you know, you make a good point about the fact that your levels are starting to get fairly defined when you get into those really, really hard range days. And, you know, you just have to play that tighter risk on the downside, tighter risk on the upside, and try to catch some reversions.
Yeah, I think it's like you have a better, like a structural reason, right, for the ranges to be defined versus like, you know, momentum where it's not quite, I mean, part of it's structural, you know, maybe like the closing of like debt ceiling hedges today causing this trend day. But it's not quite as controlled as a range day. But yeah, I think it's also a trade-off of like, you know, like decision fatigue can also factor into it and stuff like that. I mean, personally, sorry, go ahead.
No. Yeah. It's definitely a personality thing. I think the only thing I really like about it is just that I feel more comfortable when there's a sort of a structural, like you were saying, sort of a pure theoretical reason why this should work. Mm-hmm. Whereas, and maybe I think some of the slides that we have later kind of start to solve this problem a little bit, but like when you're trading the breakout, you need more liquidity to keep coming in order to perpetuate the move, right?
You've got to keep throwing gas in the fire, basically. And a lot of times that can dry up.
Exactly. Oh, that's actually a pretty decent segue.
Yeah, I was going to say.
So I guess we can probably talk about the, well, we're not calling it live OI anymore, right? We're calling it zero DT order flow.
Yeah.
But John, you want to get into this?
Yeah. So we alluded to this earlier, which is that there's this assumption that GexBot is making, and it works pretty well most of the time, that it's just literally taking volume, netting it out, and then multiplying it by the gamma of that particular strike. And you can kind of infer from the price action, well, what's going on here? Are people adding to positions? Are people selling those positions? And so forth. And regardless of what's going on, you can kind of infer that it's an important level. But something that we've been wondering about for a really long time, and I think a lot of other people out there have been wondering about, is what would it be like if you could see, if you didn't have to make that naive assumption, if you could see calls and puts being bought and sold in real time, live, with a high degree of accuracy? And I understand that to a futures trader, that might sound a little trivial, because you think about it and you're like, well, futures, the bid-ask spread is sufficiently narrow that it's okay, somebody hit the bid, somebody hit the ask, it's pretty clear what is buy volume and what's sell volume. Mm-hmm. But with options, that's not the case, because bid and ask are pretty wide. Most transactions go through near the mid price. And so keeping track of who's buying and who's selling, and essentially how many open contracts there are at each given strike at each given time, is actually a pretty substantial enterprise. There have been a lot of people that have kind of attempted this. And most people try to essentially say, okay, well, was this transacted closer to the bid or was it transacted closer to the ask? And that's sort of a, I would say, a strategy or a thought process that's derived from futures type of order flow. But me and Jess, what we've been working on for the last while is to devise a method that doesn't depend on the bid ask at all in order to categorize order flow. And the results are really, really cool. I think, is there anything else that I should add to this particular slide, Jess, that I missed?
I think that covers it, I think. Because, you know, I had also thought for a while, like the traditional, you know, bid-ask spread looking or classification was enough.
And it makes, obviously, like, it makes sense to think that way, right? Because as we have in front of us now, it's standard options chain, right? And you're looking at, like, where are these likely being transacted? And like you said, John, mid-price is pretty much assumed, right? So.
It's funny because, like, for the longest time, I did think that they were being transacted on either end of the spread. But then when you actually look at the data, and we had tweeted about the Ambrose paper that had brought this up a little while ago, but like when you actually look at the data, you know, the transactions are not really occurring on either side, and it's really hard to, like, you can kind of categorize, but like, okay, if it's greater than the midpoint, then maybe it's offer side, but it's not quite robust enough.
Yeah, and you end up with a ton of volume that you just can't categorize because it happened at the mid, and a lot of times that's most of the volume of the day. So it's like a very substantial portion, and you're left with, you're like, okay, cool. So I can categorize, I don't know, 60, 70% of the order flow, let's say. But then, you know, a lot of times an order will go through, that's, you know, 1,000, 2,000 lots, at least SPX, that's transacted at the mid. And so sometimes those really big orders, which are at really crucial moments of the day, are coming through and you don't know how to categorize them. Or sometimes there are buys that are transacted and look like sells. And I mean, we see this, I know that people have used other services and noticed this a lot, where a lot of times, right, if somebody's price insensitive, then they'll go to the other side of the spread because they don't care because they need something now, right? And that just is not captured properly by these bid-ask types of methods.
Yeah. But yeah, so we built something that does it a little bit better. It's a little more accurate. And we've been watching it for a bit, and it's kind of...
Jess is being humble. It's a lot more accurate.
Okay.
It's like 2% of the volume of a given day is
categorized. Yeah. It's actually really good. Yeah, okay. Fair enough. But it's been weird, man. Like the stuff that we see is not really what you would expect. But on a level, like the resulting price action tends to make sense. So here's one example. This actually happened yesterday. But this was near the end of the day. And let me actually explain what this chart is.
So the right side chart first, yeah, and then we can watch some price action.
Yes. So this is how we have it is the puts are colored red and the calls are colored green. And then the center axis is zero. Sorry, the scaling is all kind of fucked up. But if the bars are on the right, that means that volume of contracts, so this is purely volume, no gamma yet, was bought. And then if it's extending to the left or if it's negative volume, then it's considered sold. So in this case, we're seeing a very large, I think it was like 12,000 lots of 4,200 puts sold. And it's kind of, you know, and we're ranging. So right now, premium on ES, so this is an ES chart, is about 8 points, I think. So 4,200 on SPX puts us at like 4,208 on ES.
And another thing to mention is, right, would you really be initiating a position like that with us sitting at zero gamma, now that we've learned about all these levels and stuff?
Right, and we're hovering right there at the start of this clip. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, not me as a tiny fish, but, you know, someone who's loading 12,000 deep in the money puts.
Yeah, we were looking at this yesterday, and we were like, what on earth are they doing? That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, and just so everyone knows, this is literally yesterday that this was from, because we're recording this on the 1st of June.
Yeah, it's just like, I don't know, I guess it's a way of, a very specific way of expressing directional bias or whatever, but it's just not something that I ever would have expected. You know, like if I was expecting a rally, I would have thought that someone would load up in like out of the money calls or something, but this is just a very particular way.
Again, like, yeah, if you have the capital, this is a better way to express that opinion, simply because fall is going to die as we rally. So it's a lot of times what's crazy about it is that we watch this option chain and we see stuff that ends up making sense, and yet as we see it, it's just not what we're used to, because it's, let me just put it this way, like the big money plays different.
Yeah.
They play really different.
Yeah.
I think it's people who are a lot smarter than us, probably with a lot more money, you know?
Story of my life.
Good.
And another thing to mention is, so yeah, we mentioned the Amber's paper in that tweet, because they also had noticed how using these sorts of bid ask methods weren't particularly good at doing this, and they suggested a different way of doing it. And they also noticed and published in their paper on zero DTE that it seems like a lot of zero DTE action is actually option selling, and that's exactly what we've been seeing. Most zero DTE options have been sold, and they're just premium collecting strategies. Just like another way, it's like a yield farming on a day-to-day basis with options.
That makes sense. I mean, I wouldn't think that without reading that, of course, but if you think about it now in the context of it, you know, like you said, John, the people who have the money are making that play to collect the premium. And if, I mean, heck, if this goes, then, you know, which I'm based on the action, we don't know what's going to happen, but then yeah, that person's looking pretty good right now.
Yeah. It's interesting. Cause like people, you know, we'll see very far out of the money options. So like, I think today we saw like 42-30 calls being short pretty early on. And even though like the direction of the yield farming would suggest like an opposite direction that we would move away from that strike. Typically we kind of just navigate towards it. Like we gravitate, we get pulled towards it. I was never really like I know about Max Payne, but I never really read into it. But it seems to make the case for like, you know, people are opening these large positions and then we press towards where they get most threatened by it. Yeah, I still don't know what to make of it.
I mean, yeah. It's been completely changing the way that we think about markets. And it's possible that, for instance, like we've talked about it, but like it's possible that Max Payne, one of the reasons that it hasn't seemed to work very well is because so many options are transacted intraday that the OI or volume numbers that you have just don't reflect the actual interest that's left, so that you don't actually know what the Max Payne is by the end of the day.
Yeah, that makes sense too, because it's just, you know, you're kind of sitting there head scratching. Well, not with this, but like you said, John, you don't really know. And so you're kind of going back to, you know, technical analysis, and then intraday you're able to use a tool like this to start to gather it. But, you know, overnight you're kind of probably just sitting there like, all right,
yeah,
what is where are the important doing? Levels? Yeah.
Exactly. Jess, how long is this? Like, does it make sense to fast forward? Or?
Yeah, it does make sense, actually.
It's okay.
But yeah, sorry.
Yeah, so then we start to break, right? I mean, this is actually really cool to see. So whoever this is that's loaded up with these 4,200 puts.
Also, another thing to – I just want to mention that all the other strikes are moving, right? It's like people are transacting all the time. It's just that everything's dwarfed by that once 4,200 strike.
Yeah.
So, for instance, they just added to the 4,205s there, just in the last little skip that Jesper did. So they're adding to the calls as those short puts are there and as we're moving up. And then now that we're consolidating, they're sort of like adding, taking them away, adding, taking them away.
Also, it seems like it's a lot less active than I would have thought. You know, typically we'll see these large positions being opened, and then there's some, you know, there are fluctuations going on, but it's like everything has been mostly set, and you know, whoever's transacting these typically let things just play out over the course
that's
of the
interesting
day.
Interesting. Yeah, so they're either very confident or they're hedging in some other vehicle, probably futures.
Yeah
that's usually the answer. A lot of times we'll see something and we'll be like, what the hell is that? And then I'll be like, Jesper, I think this is a futures thing. Like, I think they're playing somewhere else.
We'll see. I still don't know if it's an illusion or, you know, we'll see a very large number of contracts being opened, and then you can see kind of an immediate like local reaction on ES. It's like it's so close together in timestamps that it's maybe it's an illusion, maybe it's not. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's really cool, though, because, you know, if you're someone who's reasonably, first of all, who's got the capital to put this type of position on, but also who's that well-funded, futures are liquid enough anyway, and so are the options, but futures is easy enough to, if you have that capital, to kind of play in and pull off if you need without leaving long-term exposure that you're going to have to cover up later. I mean, all of these funds have exposure all over the place anyway, but, you know, that makes sense that you would see a correlation between some of the larger spikes on this, you know, on the zero DTE order flow tool and then the futures market.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, the other thing to mention, at least in this case with the 4,200s themselves, is, and sometimes, I mean, this is why we're going to have different ways of depicting this, but you do need to know a little bit of options theory in order to read this sort of stuff. So for instance, those 4,200s, those are in deep in the money puts, which were sold, or like pretty deep in the money puts. So they don't have a lot of sort of convexity risk that we were talking about before, right? The gamma on those is pretty low. So essentially it's just kind of a synthetic long Yeah. So you start to put these things together, or a lot of times we'll see, for instance, like that they've sold puts and calls at the same strike and that those are just holding. So you can tell, oh, there's a short straddle around this one particular strike. And we usually gravitate towards that area and just stay there, and volatility compresses when that happens. It's really, really cool to see.
Yeah, that's super interesting. I mean, the breakdown of being able to see that information is really cool. And John, you mentioned you guys have been working on this for a long while, I think was your exact phrasing. Can't imagine.
Well, yeah, we have some projects that we were working on, and then when Ambrose came out with the paper, we just were like, well, you know what? We might as well start to
stuff out. Lit a fire under our ass, to be honest.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm actually really excited about the next slides, because part of doing this is also confirming that the tool works. And what's really hard about confirming that the tool works is that nobody will tell you. There's no information out there that, especially if, because we're doing zero DTE and not one DTE, we don't know. We can only see the transaction history. We can't see if something was bought or sold. So we started to come up with other types of graphics to figure out if what we have is actually working. And in addition to, you know, monitoring whether we're categorizing all the volume, and in addition to comparing it to a couple of other metrics, but these are the really sort of the select things that we wanted to show today. Jasper, you wanna introduce this one?
Yeah. So this was, I think, was this the 4160 puts? I think so. But so we're just looking at ways of like, okay, what if we measure net deltas? What if we measure net gamma? Of the contracts that are coming in. And so this is a ratio of net long gamma contracts over net short contracts. So long gamma as in terms of, bullish, I guess you would say.
Yeah, yeah, so bullish. Like, I was about to say bullish and bearish. So it's basically taking.
Yeah.
So on the one hand, you have long calls and short puts, right? So people who are making bullish bets. And on the other side, you have short calls and long puts. And then we're taking the gamma of those two things, and then we're calculating this across the entire options chain.
Yes, across all the zero DTEs.
Yes.
Okay, and then cool.
Here on this day, we see this huge spike. This is in Pacific, so this is 10 a.m. Eastern. And it looks like, literally, as you would think in like an auction, right? Like a trend day initiation where someone opens this large position and then it sets the context for the rest of the day.
And it's crazy because typically, right, when we say net gamma ratio, it usually hovers around the same level, which makes sense, right? Because usually bullish and bearish gamma are quite similar because of put call parity, because of a lot of sort of structural market reasons. And so when you see somebody really shove and move that ratio, it means that something happened. So we don't know whether those were long calls or short puts, but we know that somebody made a very significant wager that elevated bullish gamma at that point in time.
Yeah, they had a really strong directional bias.
Wow.
And then
later in the day, you get this other spike too, yeah.
Yeah, so it seems like both of these are leading. In this case too, you know, this looks like either they screwed up, or I'm still not sure what to make of it. I think usually with how trend days work, you have that initial drive, and then we have consolidation, and then you have continuation. And it looks like whoever this was, it might be a data feed thing, or they did look for that continuation, and then it did end up failing. So it's not like they're perfect, right? But it's still enough that like there's such little noise relative to when these spikes come in that it's hard not to see this direct correlation between the underlying.
Right, right. And that could also be like that spike before the kind of pullback you never know, like the same person might have added to that for a second go, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So very interesting.
Yeah. Okay. So we were coming up with all sorts of different ways to basically do this. And this is not the ratio. This is literally just net gamma. So it's, how do we put this, Jasper? It's like literally,
I think this was, we took all what is that? Long gamma, so it's looking for convexity, divide or subtract short gamma, so looking for compression. I think that's what this one was.
I'm trying to remember, actually. We end up having so many different interpretations, Ian, that like it gets a little overwhelming sometimes.
There's quite a few ways of like of looking this, you know. But a lot of this has been trying to turn like the original tool into something that is more actionable. Like,
sure.
You know, I think that the tricky thing with a lot of this kind of analysis is that there's a tendency to want to, you know, throw a whole bunch of charts at people, you know, give them as much analysis as possible. And I think that can make it hard for a lot of people. And at least with GexBot, like a lot of it has been trying to drill it down to something that's like more actionable, right? Like, I understand the limitations of this tool. This tool is telling me something. And then I get to make the decision to, you know, how do I incorporate it, right? Versus the tool trying to make certain decisions for me.
Which, you know, somehow is what everyone thinks they need. But in my experience, that's never the way to go, right?
Too much information. Stuck in analysis paralysis. Yeah. Exactly. It's like, well, this is saying long, this is short, but then we're looking for a range expansion.
I remembered, and I think you're right. This one is literally net gamma. It's basically how many people are long options gamma versus short options gamma. And so at the beginning of the day, you see people are trying to sell options, which is exactly what, you know, the Ambers paper noticed. And they're trying to short, you know, and this is behavior that we see very, very commonly. It's basically people who want to collect premium, they often short options at the beginning of the day. They take them off around, you know, noon, 2 p.m., mm-hmm. and then they try to get long premium and towards the end of the day, except that on this particular day, we started to sell off, and we just continue to sell off. So you can see that people are increasing their exposure, there are more long options into the end of the day, and then it peaks right when we find the bottom for the day.
Mm.
And then at that point, people start to sell options. In other words, a massive wave of put selling comes in, which is that first leg down right there. And then it just continues into the end of the day. And then this expansion of gamma is just right at the closing hour of the day. That just has to do with the fact that just like the way that gamma is calculated means that because you have all of these other, when as time goes to zero, gamma kind of goes to infinity for a very brief second. So that's why you see that massive expansion into the end of the chart.
This one's a little bit easier to understand. This one's really cool. This one and the next one. This is literally just long deltas divided by short deltas, delta ratio. And then so here we see this, it's like hovering around one-ish or so. And then we have this massive long delta spike that comes in. And then we see either reflexively or, you know, they're going long the underlying in general, but we see this massive rally that occurs after this spike has happened in the 0GT complex. I think that's one of the, I mean, obviously everyone's looking for leading indicators, but
Yeah, it's good, like actionable, right? I mean, you know, nothing's guaranteed obviously in this business, but you know, anything to kind of give you an actionable, hey, this is what seems to be going on right now.
I think with like the options market, there's so much reflexivity, right? It's like the underlying moves in a way, then the option market is like reacting to it. And so there's a lot of difficulty in separating the two or like trying to kind of quantify where one starts and the other one ends or something. Mm. And then here too.
Well, I mean, this one's kind of fun because this is literally today, earlier today. So that's why the full chart isn't complete because we didn't regraph it later. But you can also see, you can see the initiation, same as that other slide, where all of a sudden that net delta ratio spikes, means a lot of people bought a lot of calls or sold a lot of puts, whichever, right at that moment. And then we saw it again before the next spike. So again, these aren't necessarily the tools that we want to be releasing. But these are things that we're using to test all of our assumptions and make sure that our understanding of, you know, how people are taking on or taking off risk corresponds to the movement that we see in the underlying. And then part of the end game, but I think maybe Jess, maybe you'll speak more to this, is actually incorporating this zero DTE order flow, a live tracking of which contracts are open into GexBot itself to eliminate some of the naive assumptions of the original model.
Yeah, that is definitely like the goal. I think it's also, you know, trying to really shave this down into something that like can be immediately usable. Trying to like maintain simplicity, but also like still be actionable. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Like actionable, you know, information, and simple actionable information is even better, right? Mm-hmm. if you have to think too much, then you're probably dead. That's what an old floor trader told me. So,
if you're really thinking about it, you should probably just exit. You should probably just go.
Yeah. I've tried to live by that one. So,
flat is a position. Cash is a position. Yeah. Absolutely.
Very cool. Well, that's awesome. I definitely appreciate you guys sharing like the research you're doing behind this too. I know early at the beginning you mentioned a lot of what you've been doing now is the research side of things, but it's cool to get a look into it and how you're plotting this out to see, you know, how everything's interacting and what you're building is working. I mean, I can tell you that's probably more than a lot of people do when they put a tool out, right? Testing these assumptions and things is crucial.
Well, I think it would be, to be honest, it would be super scary to put a tool out that you know, we weren't willing to use ourselves. And to be honest, like we've been, at least I know the other day, Jess, like you were using it quite actively. Like you used an indication of some calls coming in to get long, I think.
It was the, I think it was the 4160 put short that came in like this day. I saw that because it was just like 10 points out of money puts just got short massively. Like it's hard to not take that trade.
And then as far as a risk perspective, I mean, you know, in terms of market context, your risk, I imagine, can still be pretty easily defined, right? When you initiate the position, because you're looking for a move. And if that move doesn't happen, you can have a stop somewhere below or a plan to get out below that breakdown.
Oh yeah. Everything is always within the context of like volume profile still, like the auction, you know, making sure that I'm not just like blindly, you know, piling into something.
It's easy. I mean, even though SPX is heavily correlated to ES, is heavily correlated to SPY, et cetera, right? Like these instruments, they still move differently. There's a difference between initiating an options trade, which is what I prefer to do, and trying to trade futures based off of this. So even if we recognize that it's super important and it influences the futures market really heavily, that doesn't mean that all the technicals of the futures market stop applying. By no means, right?
Right.
I think what's tricky too is sometimes like we'll see someone short like a huge amount of puts, right? And it gives kind of this directional bias, but then if they're so out of the money, it's not like you just can't enter a position based off of that, like in ES. Like you're not really wanting to go short to go to that level because like now your bias is kind of bullish, but it's not like you can go long because it's so out of the money, you'd be facing like 20, 30 points of drawdown, which is not remotely responsible. So there's a lot of like, it's still kind of tricky combining something like this with a pure deltas based trading style, I think.
Yeah, I think, but on the other hand though, right, like when we were talking, you guys like to trade those trend days, and we're talking about how sort of price just kind of consolidates into the upper end of the range and just squeezes itself right against a gamma node before exploding higher. And we have been just seeing that over and over again. And we honestly do not know what they're doing, Ian, but like they just keep selling calls and then getting squeezed, and then they just keep adding to the calls. And so we'll see price consolidate. Like I think today it was 4230, price will or 4220. But price will just consolidate into that part of the range, and then they keep adding short calls. Price jumps up, they all get squeezed, they all bail. And
they
then
just keep
price
rolling
back down.
Careful.
So, I mean, some of these, we showed you guys an example of, you know, some traders that are pretty smart getting into those short 4200s before a big rally. There's also a lot of traders out there that do stuff on SPX who don't seem to be particularly smart, or they maybe have a different time frame than I'm aware of. But it's kind of amazing.
Yeah, well, it's kind of funny too, because it's like, if there's zero DTE, you know, what's your time frame, or what else are you in that you're putting on this big of a? Yeah,
I was just trying to be generous.
Well, it's probably like, you know, you have like so much capital that it's like, well, all right, I'll punt some short calls here. Like, why?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, part of that too, you know, like even institutions and large participants, right? Even still, there's that. How did we end up here? And we're probably going down. So I'm just going to add to this position because I can, because I have the capital to do it. And then they still end up wrong. Right. So, yep. Yeah.
We're all human, right?
That's right. Well, cool. I didn't really have anything else you guys wanted to add here. I mean, you've shared a ton of info and I definitely appreciate putting the videos together too, because having that context on the platform is awesome. And people love to see, you know, stuff in the action of, especially our listeners, the E-mini S&P, of course. but definitely happy to have you on. And if you have anything you wanted to add, feel free.
I think that's basically it for us. I know that, like, you know, gamma is like a really complicated topic. I think, you know, it kind of requires a lot of like fundamental math stuff, which in the end of the day, I feel like is not necessary, or it's like you have to learn these things and then forget about them when it comes to actually trading, because you can't be like thinking about all these freaking derivatives while you're trying to make a decision, right? But like, yeah, it's fun to come on to like a platform with you and like be able to talk a little bit about this. You know, I think there's a lot more to cover, but I think, yeah, that's essentially the gist of it. But yeah, so again, my name is Jas. You can find our tweets at All Gamma All Day. We also have a website, gexbot.com, where you can find the image outputs. And then if you want, you can subscribe and check out the real-time version. On our Twitter is also our Discord, a link to our Discord, so you can come there and ask us questions if you have any.
Yeah, and I'm John again, and I have a podcast that's there, and we just basically get into some of the nerdier stuff. Sometimes we do a little less nerdy stuff, and there's some fundamentals videos up there. But I think overall, all I really want to say is that, we've been working really hard on this stuff. It's an insane amount of fun. We hope that people will stay tuned as we start to release some of this and sort of amplify the discussion beyond just us, right? We want to get as many people looking at these things as possible.
You guys definitely got me looking at all of it, so.
Yeah. I appreciate that, man.
Cool. Well, thanks again. I'll throw those in the pod description too, and I'm sure we'll be chatting more in the future. Thanks, guys.
Awesome. Thank you. Thanks for having us on.